You're listening to Turkish Football Weekly, available on the World Football Daily Club podcast feed. If you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go to the site and stream the show anytime to your computer, mobile phone, or tablet without having to download or sync anything. If you're not a member of World Football Daily, just search World Football Daily Club podcast in the iTunes store and download the World Football Daily Club podcast feed for free. Enjoy the show. And welcome to Turkish Football Weekly for the week of September 12th, 2013. My name is Atta Dizdar, and joining me once again is Jeremy Chapman. Jeremy, how was your week?
Gosh, my week was more incredible than than recent weeks. It was very good, actually. I can't contain my enthusiasm. I was at the U.S.-Mexico match the night the U.S. qualified for the World Cup earlier this week, so that was really, really sweet. compared to that, Atta Dizdar, how was your week?
I wish I was in Columbus, actually. I would have loved to have gone to the game. And, well, the U.S. has their Dos Acero moment, and I think this week Turkey has its own Dos Acero moment. You know what I'm referring to with the whole Dos Acero thing, right?
I do, because I was yelling it at the top of my lungs for about 2 hours on Tuesday. It was that point was not lost upon the fans.
Yeah.
From the beginning of the game, especially to right after the second goal and so forth.
But, yeah. let's talk about that at the end of the podcast this week. I think our Turkish fans...
Sounds like a plan. Yeah, it's not very Turkish, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not very Turkish, but I think maybe our Turkish listeners will be kind of interested to see how the atmosphere is in the United States, at least for their national team, maybe as a comparison to the Turkish national team. And that segues into our discussion about the Turkish national team matches on World Cup 2014 qualification. They played Andorra and Romania. We'll start off with the Turkey-Andorra match first. Turkey beating Andorra 5-0. Umut Bulut with a hat trick, 35th, 39th, and 68th minutes. All assisted by Gökhan Töre. Burak Yılmaz scored in the 64th minute. He was assisted by Gökhan Güner there. And Arda Turan scored in the 93rd minute, the third minute of stoppage time in the second half. So people were saying, you know, how would Fatih Terim respond being the interim coach? We knew last week that he was going to sign a 2-year additional deal with Galatasaray, but you know, there have been rumors going around about his status there. But we're taking a look at the Turkish national team matches. I mean, when it comes to Turkey, Andorra, well, we kind of expected them to beat Andorra, and well, they definitely beefed up their goal difference. But I think the Turkey Andorra matches will affect the rest of the group, because the results of them will probably be chucked out the window, because Andorra is probably going to finish last. But Turkey does get a moral victory there going into a road match against Romania the following Tuesday. But Fatih Terim, so far so good, 1-for-1, and we'll discuss the Romania-Turkey match later. But what did you think about the Turkey-Andorra match?
Well, the first thing was, recall that Turkey in Andorra only won 2-0, and it wasn't really that convincing at the time, obviously. And so with Fatih Terim sort of making his third debut or whatever, but sort of making his recent debut with the national team, a 5-0 victory, is that feels better, right? I mean, you knew they were going to win, but to do it with this kind of emphasis was certainly good. And, you know, I was probably just excited about the result with Hungary and Romania, with the Romanians getting a healthy victory out of the Hungarians there, was pretty much exactly what Turkey needed to kind of stop them from Hungary locking into second place there, which is, of course, Turkey's only hope, as we've known for a while, with the Netherlands really thrashing everybody. But it was really nice to see Romania get the victory there. And yeah, Andorra is not really the test that we've been waiting for, but 5-0 was a good sign.
All right, so I think we'll leave that match alone. Let's go to Romania against Turkey. Turkey beats Romania in Bucharest, 2-0 with goals from Burak Yılmaz in the 22nd minute and Mevlüt Erdinç in the 5th minute of stoppage time in the second half. And you know how we like factoids on this program. Turkey beats Romania on the road for the first time in a competitive match. And they have recorded their first win against Romania in Romania since May 1st, 1925. That was a friendly. The final score there, in case you were wondering, was 2-1. And also, Turkey records its first shutout against Romania playing in Romania. This was the stern test. Everybody was looking into this match as like the do-or-die match. And people were thinking, you know, could the miracle happen? You know, they were talking about maybe the miracle could happen. I'm not sure if we could call it a miracle or whatever. But like I said,
yeah,
I mean,
the miracle, yeah, it sort of has to happen over several games. So it sort of takes a little bit of the fanfare and whatever, the excitement out of it. But certainly they needed it, right?
Exactly. So, I mean, Turkey making a lot of history, believe it or not. I mean, we want another factoid. The first national team game Turkey ever played was against Romania. It was a 2-2 draw. I think it was back in sometime in like 1923 or something like that. But, you know, for Turkey, I mean, this was the really crucial game that they had to win, and they got it done. But it was pretty much a cliffhanger, and I did try to watch this match, but, you know, thank you, Comcast Internet. You or crapping out on me at the wrong possible time. But what I saw on the Twitter and all that, you know, people were really on the edge of their seat thinking, you know, when is Turkey going to blow it? But Mevlüt Erdinç scoring the clinching goal for Turkey, and everything seems to be pretty much maybe we can do this sort of thinking. Now, obviously, Estonia and the Netherlands are the last two matches. Turkey's still got to play Estonia away. And if you saw the Estonia-Netherlands match, I mean, I was actually on the edge of my seat for that one because I thought maybe Estonia could possibly pull off the upset. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. Think about this for a sec. Turkey does seem to have a shot now. And it seems to me like people were saying, why didn't the coaching change happened sooner? And yeah, I mean, with these two results, it's almost like, well, okay, well, why didn't the coaching change happen sooner? And that's almost like, well, we were wondering that for much of the last few months with the terrible results under Abdullah Avcı. However, I'm just thinking, you know, Avcı was never supposed to be hired in the first place. You know, I've said that ad nauseum. I'm not going to get into that argument. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, Turkey has to win out and hope for the best, and they're halfway there. Now, we all know that the best eight out of the nine groups will qualify for the playoffs, so obviously there's that to think about. And I think Fanatik was like going all ballistic about it, you know, with their sensationalized article, but you know, that was the rule placed when the competition began. But for Turkey, I think in order to really sum it up, it's just more or less, you know what, we've got a shot.
Yeah, and they have to obviously play like they still have a shot, which they very much do. You know, I fear for them even going into Estonia, who seemed to get a draw against the Netherlands. Of course, the Netherlands at that point pretty much knew they were going to win the group and of course, went on to with a victory away to Andorra the night that Romania was hosting Turkey. But I guess that's sort of the logic going forward, right, which is that Turkey plays Estonia in Estonia, and assuming we get a win there and then play and then host the Netherlands at the end, well, kind of hoping that they're going to, you know, experiment a lot and give their weaker players a chance now that they've, you know, clinched the group. And so when you look at the standings, just given how dismal it looked for Turkey two matches ago, right? It's actually pretty close now. I'll let you run through that if you've got it up.
I don't have it up.
I'll run through it real quick then, if you want. The Netherlands clinched the group with 22 points. Hungary is in second currently with 14 points. Turkey and Romania each have 13 points. Turkey's got the better goal difference with +7 compared to Romania's +1. And Estonia and Andorra have been eliminated officially. So they do not even stand a chance at achieving second place, which is all there is left in Group D right now. So a big battle you can expect between Hungary, Turkey, and Romania.
Well, I was thinking that maybe the Netherlands would call upon, like, fringe players. I wouldn't call them weaker players, but I would say, like, maybe fringe players, you know, people who would, you know, have a shot at the national team for the World Cup. You know how all these national teams have always had these fringe players that always have to try and impress the coach so they could get on the World Cup squad. But I remember our mutual friend Khan Bayazit was tweeting me. It's like, you don't know Van Gaal, do you? He's got like a huge ego, and you know the Netherlands will want to finish that group 10 for 10. However, I mean, if it was me, I mean, it's like the U.S. qualifying for the World Cup themselves. I mean, with what, two matches to go, I would just say, you know what, let's play some fringe players because really we've got nothing to worry about. And you know, the Netherlands are pretty high ranked up on the FIFA World Rankings anyway. They'll probably have a good shot at being one of the top seeds when they do the draw in a few months' time. But to me, you know, Turkey's got a shot, and it seems as though that, you know, Terim's got two matches to go at the very least. If Turkey does qualify for the playoffs, then he's got another two matches. But we also have to remember, how is the, you know, the Andorra results are probably going to be factored out. So how is that going to factor into how Turkey is going to do going forward?
Yeah, and the other thing too is, you know, we kind of want the Netherlands to play their next game like they care about it a little bit more, seeing as they're hosting Hungary on the 11th of October. So hopefully they play a little harder for their next game and then soften up a little bit when they play Turkey. It's still an uphill climb at this point. And you just mentioned, how would they do, you know, when you factor out the two victories with Andorra. Turkey with 13 points loses 6 points in that effectively, and remains with 7 points. And if you look at the ranking table for the second place teams right now, that would put them, you know, a value of 7 points would put them right at the bottom, or second to the bottom at the very best, on that second place table. So, you know, figure they get a couple of wins in there, then I think they should be okay. But it's, you know, no matter which way you cut it, it's going to be close. And it's, I don't know, I've got all the hope for them. And it's nice to know that they're still in it.
Well, I'm still the cynic, of course. But of course, let's get to the news. We got some news bites going on this week in Turkish football. The transfer window has closed, so some news bites here. Galatasaray midfielder Erman Kılıç has been transferred to Eskişehirspor for €200,000 after being signed by the Istanbul club 3 months ago on a free transfer. He has signed a 2-year contract with an option for an additional year at Eskişehirspor. They've also signed Beşiktaş player Tanju Kayhan and Parma forward Cristobal Jorkera to 1-year deals, so Eskişehirspor gets three players there. Gaziantepspor have signed a couple of players. They have signed Dinamo Kiev forward Artem Milevski to a 3-year deal, and have also signed former Lazio defender Marius Stankovicius to a 2-year deal. Kayserispor have signed Istanbul Büyükşehir Belediyespor midfielder Turgay Bahadir to a 1-year deal. The Austrian-born midfielder is best known for his tenure at Bursaspor from 2009 to 2012, where he was a part of Bursaspor Super League title-winning season in the 2009-2010 season. Konyaspor have taken on FC Porto right winger Jaume Campos on loan for 1 year. Campos did play with Kasımpaşa last season on loan from FC Porto. He scored 3 goals and had 10 assists in 22 appearances there. And Beşiktaş have signed Fulham winger Karim Fry to a 5-year deal. The fee is reported to be around £2.5 million, and he will be paid €950,000 in the first year, and throughout the duration of the contract, it'll increase by €50,000 increments. So I didn't put that on the format, but I do remember that. So I want to talk about Erman Kılıç first. I mean, I know that he's probably not going to be like a starter, but he's good for rotational depth. And I saw this on a website. I mean, if the person is listening to it, you know, I did happen to read it off his website. But, you know, why sign a guy? I mean, okay, it's on a free, but why sign a guy on a free and then sell him off 3 months later? It's almost like, well, why did you sign the guy to begin with? I mean, I'm sure Kılıç would have had a wonderful time at Galatasaray, you know, being in contention. Unfortunately, he did not get onto the Champions League roster. But I just still don't get it. It's like you signed for a team 3 months ago, and then all of a sudden you signed for another team. That's just what gets me.
I don't know. I think that maybe in the world of managing football, decisions are made on a shorter term basis than a few months, in a lot of cases. And so, I mean, obviously, if they knew they were going to transfer him along, it would seem sort of pointless, right? To sign him in the first place. I definitely get that. I guess it kind of shows you that there isn't really a grand plan, really, right? It's kind of all perhaps more improvised than we thought, the whole, behind the curtain managerial stuff going on at Galatasaray and likely at other clubs. But it'll be interesting to, sort of keep an eye on him, or just watch for his name, in the Eskişehirspor matches in case he ends up being really good. Could kind of embarrass Galatasaray a bit.
Right. And let's talk about Kerem Fry for a little bit. We saw him at the Under-20 World Cup. He's a highly touted prospect, the Turkish winger. Born in Austria, raised in Switzerland, has a Turkish father, Moroccan mother, and declared Turkey as his national team of choice. So, I mean, this guy, I have not heard really much from Fulham, from his time at Fulham. So I know he was loaned off to, I think it was Cardiff City or something like that, or he was loaned off to Cardiff City for a few months and then got recalled back. However, Beşiktaş, you with a little bit of a youth movement going on there, and considering their financial situation, we've gone ad nauseum about, and they've actually done a pretty decent job of getting their debt in check, and this is actually going to be nothing but good things for Beşiktaş, because I seem to be a good believer in this kid. And although I haven't really seen him much, I mean, I know enough people that I trust that have told me about this guy. And we saw him in the Under-20 World Cup. I mean, he did really well. And I know that his name is Koyunlu. I think that's his dad's last name. I don't know how he got the Fry part of it, but I think it might have been from his stepdad, maybe. But yeah, Kerem is a highly touted prospect, and I'm actually looking forward to seeing how this guy does if he gets some playing time at Beşiktaş. But I think Beşiktaş is just building for the future with this move.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to see. This kid is 19 years old, right? And he's had all this experience. I guess he was playing in Switzerland before he came to play for the Turks, in the U20. And it's interesting to see, how much of this youth movement was maybe inspired by Turkey hosting the Under-20 World Cup. So, it's. You know, I hope it's a trend. I hope it becomes a trend anyway, of being in young players and trying to develop them and sort of harvest them into something that could be valuable and sold off eventually, or that can win you championships. So this time of year, there's a lot for us to keep our eye on, and it's nice that Beşiktaş is sort of adding their name to that list of teams to kind of whether you support them or not, they'll still be, even more fun to watch, just to see how much playing time this young kid gets and what he's able to do.
Yeah, exactly. And there's really nothing other than that and talk about in terms of news, although there was like some rumors going around, but I don't like reporting on rumors. I mean, Turkey, when it comes to soccer rumors, it's just they'll make a conspiracy theory out of anything. I think we could probably do this in one shot. I mean, I kind of don't want to talk about a break here. I guess we could go move on to the week four schedule, and also European competition for Galatasaray and Trabzonspor will get started for them next week. So I'm going to leave it up to you. Do you want to talk about the week four schedule first, or do you want to talk about the European stuff first?
Let's go with the week four schedule since those games will happen before the
All
European
right, then.
matches.
So let's get to week four of the Turkish Super League as the league kicks back into action. Friday, the 13th of September. Ooh. Galatasaray plays on.
Don't be like
Huh?
that. Don't be like that. Are you just saying that because it's
No,
Galatasaray?
it's Friday the 13th. You know how people are during Friday the 13th.
I know,
Right.
right? Is that a global
Yeah,
thing?
I don't know if
Anything
it's a
like
global
that?
thing, but obviously you had the movies out and all that, but yeah, it's Friday the 13th of September.
So who does Galatasaray get to
Well,
play
they
then?
play Antalyaspor at home Saturday, the 14th of September. Kayserispor hosts Akhisar Belediyespor, Gaziantepspor hosts Çaykur Rizespor, and Trabzonspor hosts Karabükspor. Sunday's matches will see Sivasspor host Eskişehirspor, Gençlerbirliği hosting Kayserispor, Bursaspor hosting Beşiktaş, and Elazığspor hosting Konyaspor. And Monday's only match will feature Kasımpaşa hosting Fenerbahçe. I would say there are two main matches that people really should keep an eye on. One on Sunday between Bursaspor and Beşiktaş, because they've had a war going on for at least the last 7 years. Because, you know, obviously the Bursaspor accusations that Beşiktaş threw a match to get them relegated some years ago. And also Kasımpaşa against Fenerbahçe, because Kasımpaşa, they've had a pretty impressive team, I think, so far. You know, obviously they've got Ryan Babel, you know, with them. And, you know, I really don't really rate him that much. But I'm also impressed by Sanhori Malki. So that will be interesting to see what happens when they face Fenerbahçe. But, yeah, I mean, looking at all these, you know, even with Trabzonspor and Karabükspor, you know, Karabükspor still hasn't lost yet, and they haven't been doing too badly. And, you know, Trabzonspor, you know, maybe they're reeling a little bit, but, you know, considering they have preparations for Thursday's match against Apollon in the Europa League, and we'll get to more on that in a moment, you know, it seems as though that, you know, that might be an interesting thing there. And, you know, with the Galatasaray-Antalyaspor match you were mentioning earlier, Milan Baroš is going to make his return to the Turk Telekom Arena in an Antalyaspor uniform. So pretty interesting stuff going on, at least with the big four, you know. And I'd certainly like to see Elazığspor and Konyaspor too. I don't know why, but it seems as though that seems to be a very interesting matchup there. What stands out to you here?
You've made a lot of really excellent points. I mean, first of all, Bursaspor hosting Beşiktaş is going to be a thriller because, you know, Beşiktaş has obviously three wins and three matches so far this season. So it'll be, you know, it's just all too tempting to just watch for them to slip up. Not that I necessarily want them to, but, you know, well, we all know that Bursaspor could really get a good victory. They're currently 1-1-1, but a nice home victory for them would go a long way against the likes of Beşiktaş. I'll be amazed if nobody gets stabbed before, during, or after this match, just given the recent history. And, you know, to that point, and in all seriousness, I hope the game happens.
Yeah, right? I remember.
It just seems like, it just seems like they clashed with the cops, right?
Yeah,
like,
you remember, I think it was in the 2010-2011 season. I mean, Beşiktaş were supposed to play Bursaspor in Bursa, and a freaking war zone broke out.
Yeah. Yep, and it was because of fighting with the police. I mean, it wasn't, at least in that case, it wasn't because a bunch of fans got stabbed, like in the match in Beşiktaş. At least it was just fighting with police. But they just outright canceled that game, I think. It never happened.
By the way, I think I know why I'm probably going to keep an eye on Elazığspor, Konyaspor, because I believe Theofanis Gekas will definitely be someone to watch there, you know, in... Gekas is a really popular player, you know. It's, you know, he's the first ever person from the Greek mainland to play in Turkey, and, you know, he seems to be a really popular guy. I know that Akhisar didn't sign him back, and I think I didn't report this, but I should mention it, that Gekas had made some really, really huge wage demands from Akhisar, and, you know, Akhisar were having none of that, so Konyaspor signed him. But that'll be interesting. You know, I think Gekas has become a pretty popular player, and for Galatasaray and Antalyaspor, you know, Milan Baroš coming back to the Turk Telekom Arena. And I've been hearing that Selçuk İnan picked up an injury during his national team tenure this past weekend, and he might be out for this match in order to save him for the Real Madrid match that Galatasaray has up coming up this Tuesday. So that will be interesting to see. You know, obviously we've talked a lot about Selçuk İnan and how he's the midfield brain for Galatasaray. So with a player like that gone, we'll have to see how Galatasaray responds. And possibly Bruma could make his debut in this game. So that's another interesting dynamic there.
Definitely. And, you know, I'd also throw in and just mention Kasımpaşa and Fenerbahçe, like you had, you know, coming on the end of the weekend, if you can even call it that. I guess that's the Monday match. But, you know, Kasımpaşa with a history of not really being intimidated by the likes of Fenerbahçe. And then also with all the political stuff still going on in full force, you've got Fenerbahçe, who are basically from Kadıköy, Fenerbahçe, Asians, part of Istanbul, going over to Recep Tayyip Erdogan Stadium in Kasımpaşa, especially after a couple of days ago, as we record this, that the riots broke out in Kadıköy, in Fenerbahçe territory on the Asian side. I guess the authorities prevented the protesters from getting on the boats to cross over to Taksim Square, so they just set up riots right in the neighborhood where I used to live.
Interesting.
So that was really eerie to watch, by the way.
I was hearing about those protests earlier today before we started recording this program. And yeah, there was a lot of protests. I think there was another protester who died. I think it was in Antalya. I think it was Antakya, or as it was known as Antioch. Okay. Way back in the day in ancient times. But yeah, it was Ahmet Atakan, mm-hmm. I believe his name is. He had recently died, obviously. Yeah, so that is, yeah, now that you mentioned that, I didn't mention that before. You know, obviously Kalu Uche is still there. You know, I think I mentioned Sanharib Malki earlier. You know, Malki actually qualifies for a Turkish passport. I think he is considered Turkish, or he's classified as Turkish, I think. But he plays for Syria, so that's pretty interesting there. So the political angle for that game is going to be huge because, you know, Recep Tayyip Erdogan is a native of Kasımpaşa. You know, that's where he grew up. So obviously, you know, with Fenerbahçe fans being very much against the prime minister, will those, you know, everywhere is Taksim, everywhere is resistance chance turn up in the 34th minute, like we've been seeing over the last few weeks, featuring matches with Fenerbahçe, at least in the home front. So yeah, even the political angle with that match just makes that interesting.
Right. And it's not like they just don't like the name of the stadium. I mean, Kasımpaşa is a fairly, you know, conservative part of Istanbul for how central it is in Istanbul. And for people who haven't really kept up with the news, I mean, if you thought the protesting thing had died down or whatever, it's pretty much back. So I wonder sort of how else that will manifest itself in the sport, you know, now that it's kind of been sort of reignited in a big way. Not that it ever died down, but especially with the death of this guy you mentioned in Antakya, which is where I was last Christmas, actually. So I really should have read that correctly. But wonderful city. It's really tragic. I think this kid was like 19 years old or something like that, you know, got killed. And it can't be ignored, you know, it just can't.
Right, exactly. So I think we've wrapped up enough that we could talk about over week four. Let's move on to the European stuff, I guess. Galatasaray is playing Real Madrid in the first group stage match of the Champions League coming up this Tuesday, I believe. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct. On the 17th at 8:45 p.m. in Istanbul at Turk Telekom Arena. So do the math. And for us on the East Coast, that's 7 hours behind. So 1:45 in the afternoon. Hopefully you all can bust out of work that day. I can't, so I'm really sad.
I think I'll be keeping an eye out on that because, you know, everybody will be looking up how Gareth Bale is going to do, considering all that money Real Madrid paid for him. I mean,
oh my goodness.
Good Lord. I mean, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, regardless of Mesut Ozil leaving, and that would have been really interesting to see there too, but obviously Ozil is now with Arsenal. You know, Real Madrid is still Real Madrid to me. I mean, Carlo Ancelotti, I mean, with all due respect to Fatih Terim, Carlo Ancelotti is a way better coach than he is. You know, with all due respect to Fatih Terim.
Fine, but how much do you just love that the opener is a home match, first of all, and against the, you know, one of the two couple of teams in this group that you really need the fan support for if you're going to stand even a chance of getting a point out of the game? I think this is a great way to start the group stages, is like full force against your toughest competition at home. It's fairly ideal.
Yeah, you know, Real Madrid wants La Decima, you know, that 10th Champions League title. And, you know, they've shelled out all that money for Gareth Bale, you know, so he's got to deliver. But perhaps Celtic, you know, will be safe for Galatasaray for this game, because they certainly do need him, considering Real Madrid's quality. Because, you know, like I mentioned, with Ozil leaving, they still got a lot of quality. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, everybody knows who he is. Everybody knows what he could do. And Like you said, I believe it was last week or 2 weeks ago, Galatasaray maybe will have some revenge on their mind because they got eliminated in last season's Champions League when it came down to the quarterfinal matchup between the two clubs. So that's going to be another interesting dynamic there.
Definitely, and I think normally we'd sort of preview these matches in pairs, but it seems this year they're sort of staggering the Champions League matches like every other week or so. It's kind of more spread out, I guess. And then that could be a nice thing. Their match after Real Madrid won't come until the 2nd of October when they have to go to Italy and play Juventus. So plenty of Champions League action to look forward to that's sort of going to be scattered throughout the season.
Right. Well, we were talking about politically charged matches during our Turkish Super League Week 4 rundown with Kasapasha and Fenerbahce, but if you want to talk about really politically charged, I mean, Apollon versus Trabzonspor in the UEFA Europa League coming up this coming Thursday, which would be next Thursday as we are recording this, you know, considering all the history between Cyprus and Turkey, you know, the whole events of 1974, and, you know, I mean, when Fenerbahce played Apoel, I believe was in last season's Europa League, there really wasn't that much. I mean, you obviously will have some of the, you know, the politically charged chants and all that other stuff. You know, considering the political implications of this match, I don't think it's going to really matter too much because obviously you don't want to have political chants, but this is going to be interesting for Trabzonspor. I mean, we really have to see how they do this weekend against Karabükspor to really see how they would do against Apollon, but it seems to me as if Trabzonspor should be able to handle them, but, you know, we'll have a better idea after this weekend.
Right. I think on paper, definitely Trabzonspor can handle them, but, you know, imagine them. They go to the capital city of Cyprus to play this, Greek Cypriot team. Given the political history, given that it's the opener and all the fans will be out there and they'll kind of have that extra reason to play for, you know, that sort of the difference between college basketball and the NBA, right? And that difference will be resting with Apollon, who I think are going to be really, really looking for something to celebrate, you know, against the likes of Trabzonspor. So they better be on their best. And for that reason, if they drop this weekend's game, like you had suggested they might against Karabükspor, I mean, you can use that as an excuse as long as you can perform in the European match following it. But I hope for the best for Trabzonspor. I think they should be able to get this as long as they cannot let the fans get into their heads too much, which I think they'll definitely be trying to do.
Well, I think we should wrap it up here for Turkish Football Weekly. And before we get to your experiences at the U.S.-Mexico game, I wanted to address something from last week. Unfortunately, when the podcast originally came out for last week on World Football Daily, it was actually the podcast the previous week. We got everything corrected, and it was actually my fault because I sent Rafa the wrong file name. But we got it all corrected, so if you want to go back and listen to that one, go right ahead and listen to that one. And the second thing is, let's talk about your experiences with the U.S.-Mexico match. I mean, I guess this is really more for our Turkish audience, you know, maybe not really for the U.S. audience that probably saw it on TV, but I guess this is really more for maybe our Turkish listeners. You know, maybe they might have some preconceived notions that soccer really isn't that huge in the U.S., but, you know, from your experiences in Columbus, I wanted to get some feedback from you. I mean, you were there. I mean, talk about the experience. I mean, try and give a good comparisons to what you've seen in Turkey and what you've seen here in the States in that game.
Yeah, so first of all, I mean, my presence at the game is really my excuse for not being able to watch the Turkey-Romania match, although I did catch the highlights later, but I was tailgating outside the Columbus Crew Stadium in the capital city of Ohio, and at the time, but it did cause me pain at the time that I couldn't see the Turkey game. I probably looked like a bit of a weirdo there, you know, checking the scores on my phone constantly. But you know, the atmosphere at that game and around that stadium before the game and after were all just incredible. And I would compare it to my experiences going to Beşiktaş games, home games, like I used to when I lived in Istanbul. It's not a factoid that comes up very often, but I've been to more matches of Beşiktaş than Galatasaray, despite my loyalties, just because it's just kind of, you get that passion. And when people would visit me when I lived over there, I kind of thought, you know, let's go to a Besiktas match. You kind of need to experience in a new stadium and the Dolmabahçe March, as I call it, from Besiktas toward Kabataş, where the stadium is. But it had the songs and the chanting and the passion and everything you sort of expect from just a thrilling match. I think I threw my voice. I'm glad it came back in time for the podcast. But it was incredible. I think one of the nicest moments was after the game, about 15 or 20 minutes after it had finished, and the U.S. team had finished kind of doing their lap, and Jürgen Klinsmann was over. They sort of saved us for last. I was in with the American Outlaws and the group behind the goal, and Jürgen Klinsmann comes over, and he just kind of celebrated in front of the fans, and everybody just started cheering his name because they knew we were about to. They knew we basically had qualified for the World Cup, which we found out we had a little bit later once the result came in with Honduras and Panama. But anyway, you know, just to kind of feel that energy and to just celebrate the success of the national team was also really special. So I recommend it to anybody. I was lucky because I didn't even know I was going to this game until earlier that morning when an extra ticket had come up. But do it. if you get the chance.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I would consider the U.S.-Mexico a derby, you know, kind of like an international derby. I mean, would it be comparable to Fenerbahce versus Galatasaray or any of the Istanbul Big Three derbies? It's debatable. Yeah. It's debatable. But the passion is there, but that would be a debate. Definitely. If we're going to make this connect this with the Turkish context.
I think they're very different sorts of things. But it's definitely got a personal element between the U.S. and Mexico, and it was definitely if you haven't seen the highlights, then you get an idea of what happened there. But in the U.S., because the country's so big, you kind of don't usually find yourself anywhere near a national team game, unlike in Turkey, where I went to national team games in Turkey, and it was sort of easy, right?
Sure. And I believe that is going to do it for this week's edition of Turkish Football Weekly. We actually were thinking about doing breaks, but, you know, I guess we talk so much that we got it done in one full shot. So
it was just too exciting. We couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. couldn't and, you know, away. Obviously we'll have a lot more stuff to talk about next week. But for now, I guess that'll be it. Thank you, Jeremy, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, as always. It was a blast. Thanks.
And we thank you for listening to Turkish Football Weekly this week, and we will see you all next time.